Session number 21595, Reel 1.
Sonny Pratt, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Harwich, Essex.
Which year was this?
1918.
Did both your mother and father come from Harwich?
My mother was from Harwich, and my father was from Horden Colliery in Durham.
So did you grow up and have your schooling in Harwich?
I left, my parents were during that time quite problematically. They couldn't afford to keep me, so I went to move up north to Horden Colliery in Durham to live with my grandparents. So I did my schooling there until I was 11 years old, then came back to Harwich to live with my parents. And I left school there when I was 14.
So that must have been 1932.
Yeah.
Did you get a job?
My first little job was working in a cafe, washing up for 2 and 6 a week. But I left that, and then I got a job with between the cinemas, the three cinemas. And I used to run the Paramount News between the three cinemas on a bicycle. They all belong to the same person, so he saved money by running the one news program, Paramount News. I remember that. Da 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 da. Yeah. And I was that till I moved up to the position of the operating room. I got up to there after a while. And in the meantime, I joined the territories, that's right. But I desperately wanted to get to sea, really, but with my commitments, because my father was killed in 1944. Just before the war. What date? I forget now. 37. I can't quite tell you, I forget now. My father was killed, he was worked on the boats between Harwich and Zeebrugge, and he slipped on the quayside and fell and died in hospital in Zeebrugge. So after that, I had a sort of commitment to Mum and the family. I had to earn a little bit, so I joined the NAFI in HMS Ganges in Shotley. And from there, I was moved up to HMS Caledonia in Rosyth Dockyard. She was the old liner Majestic, but she was converted to a training ship for naval ratings.
What was it like in the NAFI at Shotley?
Quite hectic. It's we had lots of, especially on Wednesdays, which was the pay day when they got their shilling. And we used to do hundreds and hundreds of bags of peanuts and things up, and we had what we call a charlie, was a cake made from all the bread and currants which were left over, and the bakers in Ipswich used to send these down every Wednesday. They were a penny each, and a bag of peanuts was a penny. So the men and a bottle of lemonade, which we made on there, I used to make that for the NAFI. It was a penny a bottle then. So for 3 pennies, they had a good afternoon. But when they all get onto the parade ground, maybe probably 1,000, say, and then when they got to dismiss, everybody ran for the canteen. It was like thunder. So we should rush, open the door, and quickly rush behind the canteen. And that went on for about 2 hours, non-stop. But then we had, of course, look after the other ratings as well. We used to run their shops and their bars, 3 bars, and look after the office. And we used to do all the catering for their sports and things like that.
How were the boys treated at HMS Ganges?
Very, very tough, very strict. It's a very strict place. But I think when I listened to some of them who went through, it did them good in later life, because they were very well disciplined. They appreciated life. And they all made very good seamen, right from the bottom to the top. They were all good seamen in the end. Yeah.
Were you at Shotley very long?
I was at Shotley for about a year before moving to the Caledonia. It was a different thing. It was for ERA artificers, sort of, to train the engine room people. And I was only up there for 6 or 8 months.
Doing what?
Doing the canteen and different ways, getting the newspapers from the town and things for them. And in general, you know, looking after their shall we say, that their sweets and things like that, their cigarettes, or their, if they want something special for tea, a slice of ham, something like that, we'd give them something different to the menu that was offered to, by the purser. The purser used to do the main meals and we'd do the extras, like you go into your grocery shop, want something special. And from there, I got a call to join HMS Gloucester in the end of 38.
Were you actually in the Royal Navy?
We weren't in the Royal Navy till the war started. When the war started, then we signed on for the Royal Navy. Because otherwise, you're a civilian on a ship. Where if you're caught, you would have a job to explain yourself. So when war was declared, all NAFI ratings, well, Army and Navy and Air Force, they all had to join the forces. So we were part of the forces then. And came under all their disciplinary code and everything.
How did you feel about that?
Well, it's something I'd wanted previously, but I couldn't get because family and health-wise, I couldn't get through to join the Navy at the first place.
And you joined Gloucester immediately war was declared?
I was on the Gloucester war. I joined it before war was declared, and we left England in January in 1939. And we were doing, we were with the East Indies squadron of three cruisers. The Liverpool, Manchester and Gloucester. That was East Indies squadron. And we went round to the various parts of the empire in that area. India, Ceylon as it was then, and East Indies all round there. The different, all the islands, the Maldives, the Seychelles, before they were, because they were nice then, all those places. And we used to go to them, and the people really looked after us, you know, really made a fuss of us. They trusted us in, and they're quite good.
Where were you based?
The base was, well, your actual base in East Indies was Ceylon, Trincomalee. But we only went there after we'd been at sea for about 6 months, and we go back there for a bit of a holiday. They had a camp there where we could go and have a rest, because in the tropics all the time was quite hot. So you'd have a month's rest, a game of golf and a few cold beers. But we always had to make our own entertainment there. We used to have our own ship's concerts and everything.
What kind of work did you have to do in Gloucester?
In HMS Gloucester, I was in charge. Well, we did the, if you can say, we were like the village shop. We had everything that the men wanted, particularly their cigarettes and drinks. Which, and then again, I used to make all the drinks for the ship, and the ice cream, and besides looking after stores with the others, and I was on her till. We went to Crete, and just before the Crete action, we went to Piraeus in Athens, and we're so short of stores, I was sent ashore to see if I can get some. And the army had commandeered a brewery in Athens to store all that was needed for the army. But I had a bit of a job because I was Navy, and it took a bit of negotiating to get these stores, but trouble was, when I went ashore there, the brewery was belonged to Fix Brewery, and
whose brewery?
Fix, F-I-K-S, Fix Brewery, and when I went ashore, not knowing any Greek really, I asked where Fix Brewery was, and everybody kept sending me to the cafes where the beer was. So it took me a time to get to Athens, really. I was quite sober. I just had one drink, and I realised what was going to happen, but I made it. But when I got back to the dock, the boat was sailing. She'd had an emergency call, and she left me in the dock with a lorry load of stores. So I had to take them back to the army, and I stayed with the army till I got back to Alexandria. I went back on the Ajax, HMS Ajax.
So you missed the sinking of the Gorgon?
Missed the sinking, yeah, missed the sinking. And
what kind of stores were you trying to get to shore?
Anything I could, anything edible, particularly eggs and chocolate, cigarettes, anything you could get, I had to get it. Tin fruit, tin corned beef, anything like that, if I could get it. That was what we wanted. We want anything we those days, because of the sinking of the convoys and things out east, things were getting very scarce. The tin stuff, we weren't getting any at all. We had to rely on local supplies. The fresh eggs weren't always very fresh. The chickens would jump out of the box. But all in all, over the war, we managed.
But the Naffy wasn't cooking meals for the...
No. So we didn't do the cooking. We did the catering. The ship itself had its own galley with its own cooks and its own supplies. They did the main catering. We were there for all the extras they wanted. Shall we say, the ship's purser did the breakfast, dinner and tea. But if they wanted a tin, the tea would be bread and cheese or probably like something like that. But we'd be able to supply a tin of fruit. All the things that the purser couldn't supply, we supplied that.
Including chickens and eggs?
Oh yeah, if we could get them, yeah. We could cook, because at that time we couldn't get anything. And I was told to get what I could. Then we could have given to or sold them to the crew to boil up. Boil your eggs up. Anything going, we had to get it.
So you were left on the shore at the Piraeus with a lot of stores.
Yeah, and I got them. So I had to take them back to Athens, to the army depot there.
How could you carry it all about?
Oh, I was still on the lorry. Yeah. And actually, we're taking in good fun, you know. They said, well, you stay with us for a while. But I stayed there, I think, about 3 months before I could get back to Alexandria, get a ship back.
You stayed for 3 months in Greece?
In Greece, yeah.
Doing what?
Well, helping the army Naffy there get stores to the well, then we weren't, the Greeks weren't actually in the war then, but we had all the German fifth columnists and things around, you know. So we were there, and we had to be careful what we said, you know. We knew that people were, one or two of them were just making your acquaintance to get information. But we the lads knew most of them anyway. But we never went out of any way. We mostly entertained ourselves.
So these were Greeks working for the Germans?
Supposedly, yeah. Well, I remember one. He said he worked for Philips. Well, I knowing a bit about radio at the time, he didn't know much about Philips radio, but my other friend, Sergeant Morrison. Him and I were great buddies because I could play the piano and he can play the violin, so we used to play, and we used to entertain in a little. Little cafe nearby, and they did try to get to us, but we'd rather have a drink. We never had too much. We all had Well, we had to drink what we could afford.
And you say you were there for 3 months in Greece?
In Greece, yeah.
Was that mostly Athens or the Piraeus?
Athens. Athens was the depot, and I just worked in the depot until accommodation back to Alexandria could be found. Because the ships never knew, when a ship came to port, you never know where, whichever port you're in, you never knew which port you're going to go to in the afterwards, you see. Although Alexandria was a base, you get back there eventually, but at that time we're having Suda Bay was a base for Crete and for the operations there. It was just working up to the point where that was going to be taken over by the Germans, you see. So that time, during that 3 months, by the time I got back to Alexandria, the troops were starting to come to Greece for the Greek affair. Let me see now. And after a little while, after a week or two, then I joined the Barum. And the Barum was a different, see, what we call canteen messing. We had nearly about 1,200 men on there. And what we did on there, we did the breakfasts and the suppers, and the purser did the dinners. So it was quite a lot of work on there. But we had eight staff on. We had six on the Gloucester. They all went down with the ship, the whole lot. On the Barum we had eight. I was the assistant manager on the Barum, and we went to various places. But we used to buy all the eggs in quantity there from Jim Irish. He was the sort of local agent.
Who was this?
Jim Irish, who's an Arab. Jim Irish. We call him Jim Irish. But that was his nickname. But he was an Arab dealer. We used to get all the stores from him, all the fresh stores, lettuce and tomatoes and eggs, anything like that we got from him. All the hams we got, we used to get direct. They were all tinned hams we used to have. They were from the UK. But when we ran out of them, we had to find other means. But we used to get the bacon, steaks, or meat anyway. If it made a steak, if it was edible, we'd get it. she went, had several trips with her, but she was sunk off the north coast of Africa. I was actually I was in the hospital when she was hit. And I remember I heard this thud. And I knew, well, in those days, you're always in action. You understand what I mean? You're always an action station. Incidentally, all us, the NAFI staff, our action station was first aid. Everybody in the NAFI was first aid. Like the cooks and everywhere else, you all had an action station. So the ships weren't only gunners. Everybody else had to dip in and do their job when you went into action. But I was actually in the hospital. I had an accident with my wrists and things. So I only had one good arm when she was hit. And I in the first thump I heard, I thought, well, this is not normal. So I rushed out of the hospital, ship's hospital, and up the ladders. By the time I got up, she was almost keeled down in the water over at 45. And I jumped off the keel into the water and she went up. After I'd done about 10 yards off the side, she just blew up, and I just remember going through the water at a hell of a speed and green bubbles and froth all around me. And I don't remember coming out of the water really, but I was picked up by a destroyer, the Hotspur. And my brother was on the ship with me. Unfortunately, he went down. He was only 17 and a half. But I didn't see any more poor old Ted. So I came back to Alexandria and spent some time in hospital. And as there's no more ships to go to, I put into a depot on shore for naval personnel.
Could I just stop you there and go back to the barroom?
Yeah.
Which ship were you the more happy in, Barham or Gloucester?
It's very difficult because when you go on a ship, you go into one big family, and every ship seems to be the same. It's the people around you. Now, I must say that I don't think you could differ any ship in the Navy. They're all good companionship. You all live for each other. You supported each other. It was a hell of a good life, really, because you knew nobody was going to smack you at the back of the head. You know what I mean? You knew that you're all working and fighting for each other. It's very good, very good feeling. Yeah.
And why was this Egyptian called Jim Irish? If he was
I don't know, but his father was called Jim Irish as well. I know he had six wives, and we used to say, "Who was sleeping with tonight, Jim?" You know, but you could speak to them like that, you know. Anyway, they don't mind what you said to them, as long as you gave them some money, you know, did business. But they're very good, and he did Alexandria, and his brother did Port Said. So, but they had the contracts to, of course, you had to have permission to go on the Navy ships then, you know, anyone. So they had he had the legal right to come and do the trading with us.
So he used to find the supplies that you wanted?
Yeah. Him and the Nappy. We had a big Nappy warehouse in Alexandria as well, where we could get the tin stuff, the cigarettes, the chocolate, the stuff for making your ice creams and things like that. You can get all that at the base in Alexandria. Well, almost all of it, you know. But as time went on, towards when Rommel was getting close, obviously there wasn't much stuff left. It was all gone. Actually, when I left Alexandria, I had to close the establishment I was in. I was told to get what stuff I could away and just leave everything. And we went down to Port Tewfik and waited there to get a ship down to Mombasa.
Just, if I can come back to the barroom again.
Yeah.
When it was sunk in November 1941,
yeah.
Can you take me through again, step by step, in as much detail as you can remember?
Yeah.
Just so I can get it clear exactly what happened, please.
Well, at the first thump, I looked at my friends in the hospital and said, "This is not this is a bit, we've been hit," and we automatically said, "Well, let's go, because if you didn't, the places were all bolted down and you wouldn't get out." So we got out as quick as we could, got to the ladder, which by then was getting almost upright, and got onto the foredeck, scrambled upwards. We had to go up the deck to get over the side, and by that time she began to heal over quite quickly. And I remember the other chaps standing on a kill, didn't know whether to jump or not. But I thought, well, I've got to go first. I've only got one arm to swim with, you know. So I jumped in, and luckily I did that, because those that stayed on the ship were just blown to smithereens. And I remember the gun turret going through the air, you know, and that's all I remember. Just apart from going through the water and gasping for breath, and all my life was going there in front of me. I saw my life going, and I went back so many, many years, and all my life was there until I came to on the ship, this destroyer.
But when? Karen?
I didn't realise, I did think I was dead at one time, you know. You get that feeling. It wasn't a bad feeling, really, but when I came to on the top of the water, then I realised I was safe, and they pulled me aboard. But some time before I got on board, because we had to hang around, the ships wouldn't come in while the submarines were about, so we had to stay on the surface, and paddle away until somebody came to pick you up.
What do you mean when you say it wasn't a bad feeling, the thought that you might be dead?
I can't explain the feeling, really. It's just that you accepted that you should be going somewhere. It was a very odd feeling, but it wasn't a feeling of being afraid or anything like that. All you thought, well. So it wasn't a case. No, it wasn't a case of fear. It's an odd thing you can't really explain. Until I came to, and I thought, oh dear, I'm still about. I'm still here.
Was it just a feeling of resignation?
Possibly that. Because I thought, now I didn't think I was going to get out of it, not after the glimpse of what I saw going above me, you know.
You said that the other patients in the hospital all decided to leave.
All those that could, yeah.
What about the doctors and nurses?
There was no nurses. We had, the nurses were all men. We had men, sick birth attendants. They made a scrabble as well. Those that, there wasn't any serious ones, or those that could walk, we all got out. There's no badly injured ones there at the time. Probably about six or seven patients in there. But these sick birth attendants, the nurses, as we could, you'd say, they all got out as well. Possibly the docs as well must have been there.
What did you see when you got on deck?
Well, we didn't see much, because when you got on the deck, the level deck should have been like that, and it was like at a degree, you see, so you're going up about 10 or 20 degrees to get to the gunwale or the guardrail to get over, to get onto the side of the ship to dive off. Then what we did, I walked down to the keel of the ship, or ran down rather, and then jumped off from there.
Why didn't you go down to the side which was already in the sea?
Oh, we couldn't do that, because you know she's going to heel off. You've been underneath the ship, you see.
Was the hospital very far below the top deck?
Three decks down. Something I thought of then.
Was there a lot of panic in the ship?
There's no time for panic, because everything happened in 3.5 minutes. Everything, she's hit and gone in 3.5 minutes, Over 800 men in 3 minutes. Quite a episode in my life, that was. And there's only myself and the manager saved out of our staff on there.
And once you got to the keel, you just dived in?
Just dived in, jumped in and hoped for the best.
What was the water like?
Cool. You weren't thinking of that. You never thought of that. You thought, well, some means of escape, let's go.
Was the water dirty?
Oh, no. You're in the middle of the Mediterranean. It was quite... At that time, there's no oil on the water. There was when we came up. There was oil afterwards. There was all sorts of things on the water when she blew up.
Did you sink far down?
I couldn't tell you that. I know that I saw the light above me. It was like looking through thick green glass full of bubbles, you know, aerated bubbles in big thick glass. Just looked like that. I could see the light above me, some feet above me. But I was going along at a speed. I don't know how I was travelling, but I was going along and I could see the air, the ceiling above me, the daylight above me. Like looking through a skylight in your roof. A big one.
Could you swim well?
Not very well at the time. I only had the one arm, you see. But I suppose I flipped it a little bit. But I couldn't, because all my veins had been cut in this arm, you see.
How had you done that?
Actually, I've been cutting some bacon on the machine, and they'd fired the guns and the baking machine jumped and...
Were you normally a good swimmer?
Oh, yes, yes, good swimmer, yeah. I swam miles when I was a kiddie.
Was it dark or light when the ship was
sinking? It was light when, during the day, yeah. I forget the actual hour, but... it was daylight, yeah.
Were you in the sea long before you were picked up?
No, I would say probably an hour, no more. They did come and pick us up quite quickly. The Navy would, if there was no danger around, they'd come straight away to pick you up. It was only when you had submarines and things or dive bombers or whatever.